Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Censored. I'm Aoife Vrutnak.
And I'm Lloyd Maeve Houston.
And we are looking at Possession and one of the wildest films I think you'll ever see. I mean, how's your incubus today, Lloyd?
it's taken the form of Grandier! Grandier! Yeah, no, hell shall hold no surprises for us after this film.
Yeah, oh. For sure. Because there is a lot of content here, we are really going to have to give a full-throated warning here, I think.
Yes, this is, while we'll obviously try to handle it with, you know, due sensitivity, it's an episode that is going to probably involve discussions of various forms of sexual violence at different points, and it might be quite a difficult listen if you are someone for whom that's triggering in any way. So it's also going to be a difficult listen probably if you're religiously minded, but at that point, I mean, have you gotten this far with this podcast?
Yeah, I can't imagine the easily offended religious types are listening. Unless, of course, that's your kink.
No, I mean, although, to be fair, as Ken Russell claimed of the film, you know, it's about blasphemy. It is not necessarily blasphemous. I do think that actually it is a surprisingly sincerely spiritual film that just happens to feature more nun orgies than a Fast and the Furious film features car chases.
But oh god, it was completely unexpected. I mean, you can read what is in the film and then you watch it and you're like, okay, you went there.
It's one of those things, like, I'm obviously the kind of last person in the world to do the sort of like, oh, you couldn't make this today, but like, you could not make this today. The idea that this is a big studio film, like, United Artists had a crack at it and then actually looked at the screenplay and were like, nope. But Warner Brothers, you know, made this and put it on kind of relatively wide release. And that is astonishing to me.
Yeah. There is no way it would get funding. Just absolutely no way. And also that, I mean, much of what's depicted, the actors would refuse to do it, I think.
I was going to say, that's the other thing. I feel like the expectation of working conditions on a set may have changed in a way that would also make this very difficult to film.
I suppose we should really give a very, if we can manage, a quick outline of the plot.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we can sort of toggle between levels of description. So like, briefest description we could arrive at is just sort of non-orgy.
Non-orgy, gratuitous torture.
Yeah, but essentially the film centers on two figures who are particularly significant. On the one hand, we have Father Urbain Grandier, played by Oliver Reed, who is just at the absolute height of his...
I mean, what a hunk.
And like, and you'd think when you shave the man's head and, you know, like, put him in a burlap sack that he'd look worse. Nope.
No, he was just as hot. He controls it.
And then the other sort of key figure in the mix is Sister Jeanne, who's played by a young and, again, equally like, my God, Vanessa Redgrave, also at the absolute height of her powers and making a completely batshit role. kind of, you know, really psychologically coherent and compelling.
And then, unbeknownst to Grandier, the priest engaged in this massive power struggle instigated by Sister Jeanne, who starts confessing to being possessed, but possessed by a devil in the form of Grandier.
By which, you know, what is actually occurring is that he is just the hottest priest. Like, Fleabag, I'm sorry, but like, Grandier, like the the opening act of this film is just like, what if there was a priest so fuckable that an entire region were consumed by passion for him? But yeah, so basically, what the plotty side of things, I suppose, is all bound up with a kind of power struggle that's emerging out of the kind of unification of France into a modern nation state in which church and state are acting in concert. So Louis XIII and Cardinal Richelieu are sort of unifying or synthesizing church and state, with Richelieu being really the, you know, the actual kind of Machiavellian power behind the throne. And a big holdout in this unification project is Loudun, which is a town with these very, especially in the film, incredible looking fortifications designed by Jarman that are just like stunning. And this is all part of a, you know, an effort to expunge the Huguenots, who are a sort of pseudo-Protestant sect. But basically, it becomes this struggle between centralizing authority and regional power, where Grandier is the kind of, you know, he stands up for the town. Meanwhile, he's pursuing his own sort of esoteric project of like, what if sex was good with God and takes himself a wife? But anyway, basically, all of these interested political figures seize on Sister Jeanne's, you know, her just thinly veiled, eroticized Jesus fanfic starring Grandier as a basis for alleging that he is a sorcerer. And through a kind of set of scripted prompts, almost, all of the nuns in this order become possessed by the idea of their possession and see it as an opportunity to throw off what has been an intensely repressive regime in which they have very little spiritual investment. And this culminates in the show trial and then burning of Grandier. And but it really, very little of this does justice to quite how Ken Russell shoots any of it or renders it.
No, because one of the things he says in interviews about it is, at one moment it's a religious film about the power of the church. At the one moment it's about the power of faith and what you think religion is in your heart rather than in any of the state structures. Then it's about the king, and then it's about Protestants, and then it's about everything all at once in the most extraordinary costuming. And the way it's shot, when you, these big crowd scenes where everyone is incredibly dressed in this, so stylized, but also quite believable. It's not stupid historical fiction. It's quite restrained. I mean, everybody, you know, people didn't wear a lot of color.
Restrained. Is such a funny word to use in connection with a film that is this maximalist. But no, you're right. Derek Jarman, who went on to be obviously an incredible and very kind of provocative queer filmmaker in his own right, is the production designer. And you have in Loudun, it's all very sort of monochrome. Everyone's in black and white. It's all quite strong, clean lines. There's apparently the sort of inspiring production note came by way of Huxley, which was that the nunnery should, you know, it should play out like a rape in a public toilet. And, you know, we'll come on to the first part of that. But this sense of like these ecclesiastical spaces as weird, sanitary, very stark, like white tiled spaces, like they look like sanatoria. They look like a toilet. Or, you know,
Or a kind of London Underground or a kind of public transport space.
Absolutely.
These kind of big communal vaulted tiled spaces. Yeah.
There's also, especially whenever we're with Richelieu in, you know, whatever cathedral space he's in, it just looks like a Bond villain lair. Like, there's a point where he's just trundling around on this little, like, standing desk thing that people are pushing. Like, it looks like a kind of Ken Adams sort of set. But then the court is just pure glam rock. Like, it is the queerest thing. There's an amazing sequence where Louis arrives when the possession is in full swing, and he's in these rainbow colored sparkling tights that are the most beautiful thing. And initially you think it's because he's under a stained glass window, but then you just realize that's just like the look.
He's just dressed that way.
The film opens with Richelieu watching a performance of a kind of court mask starring the king. That's like the, you know, a sort of version of Venus, and it's
it's undescribable. Actually, it is literally like you really do have to watch this film to experience it, because I also found it kind of haunting in that when I went back to relook at various bits and I put the DVD on and the chords of the music played, I was like, whoa, I was brought back into the film. Like, even the music is extraordinary. Everything, yes. It's a complete experience.
This is one of those films that could only be a film as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, it is...
Even though it's drawn from a book. I suppose we should say that this was never submitted to the Irish Censor.
Mm.
And as far as I know, never has been. The copy I bought has been certified by the British Film Censorship Office. So it's 18s under the British system. Under the Irish system, it would be too if it was certified. But it was never submitted. And I suspect it hasn't been, because it's not stocked in any public library, this DVD. And neither is the book, The Devils of Loudun by Huxley, stocked anywhere. And that was once banned. So it obviously maybe is kind of cuts too close to the bone in the whole crazy Catholic kind of thing.
Just a bit.
Just a bit. I mean, it is, yeah, it's challenging stuff if you are religiously minded. And it did provoke, like, the Vatican came out against it when it was screened initially. There was a lot of pushback from various conservatives in lots of countries. I mean, this isn't an Irish censorship moment. This is an international censorship moment.
and a long and kind of storied back and forth between Ken Russell and the DEA. So he was friends with the president of the BBFC at the time, and they have these extensive exchanges of correspondence, dinners, and I mean, if you want to see the film, it's not easy to stream, and there's no kind of official place to do so, except maybe the BFI player, possibly. But you can get a fantastic DVD version that has a wonderful kind of accompanying booklet that reproduces some of this. And there's they reproduce a memo from Ken Russell to the president of the BBFC where he's like, "I've taken the shit from the altar." I've cut the orgy in two.
Because if you have seen it recently, I think everyone should kind of maybe do a chronological check. Because if you saw it before 2012, you need to go and buy the new DVD or somehow see the version that's available now. Because before 2012, you weren't watching the X-rated version that was released in Britain in 1971. And that's the closest to Ken Russell's vision that we got.
Yeah. So Russell, as he's making the film, you know, he knows what's coming. So he liaises. I don't blame him. it was tactically shrewd. But, he really does. For a director who is infamous for being confrontational and quite kind of bellicose and like a big rowdy lad, you know, even he, I think, recognizes a degree of tact is necessary to get this thing into cinemas at all. So he goes out of his way to engage with the BBFC. They suggest a raft of sort of cuts and alterations. The studio have their own view on what needs to change, particularly with an eye to an American market. So eventually, after much horse trading, a cut is arrived at that the BBFC are prepared to pass with an X rating, which is their, you know, kind of highest rating.
Panic.
And even then, lots of local authorities in the UK are like, no, this shan't be screened. But then, in order for it to circulate in America at all, a further round of cuts is made to produce an R-rated version. But whenever it's being prepared for release on home media, it's the American R cut that is used, which is quite significantly further sanitized compared to the British one. So if you didn't see it in the UK in 1971, you will have missed significant portions of this film. And even then, there is still a great deal of material that remains sort of unaccounted for. So there's, on the DVD, there's a documentary that Mark Kermode did for Channel 4 in like 2004 or something, where he and a team of people he sort of assembled found a reel of missing material or a different cut of a particularly crucial sequence that was, for Russell, was the sort of heart of the film. And that, even that, hasn't been restored into its proper place in the the cut that you can get on the DVD. So you have to like watch the film, then watch this documentary, then watch the bit in the documentary where they show you the sequence as it would have been.
And the reason we can't see this piece that's been cut but rediscovered is because Warner refused to give permission for a new director's cut to be issued. So like, they own it and they own the rights to the product, and they're like, no, we're still not putting those 4 minutes back in, because no.
and even the restored version of this, i.e. the British X cut that was on, you know, commercial release in 1971, has only really ever been screened kind of fleetingly as an object of historical interest at certain film festivals.
It's never been released again.
You're not going to like go see it at your local, you know, sort of art house cinema. So yeah, this film somehow is still one of the most contentious things committed to celluloid. The sequence in question, it is worth saying, just to explicate somewhat why this might be, was referred to internally within the production as the Rape of Christ sequence.
I mean,
you know, and that's not hyperbole.
No, and I knew what it was called, having read about it before I saw the documentary with the piece in it, and I was still shocked. Mm. Even though it had been described to me what happened, I was like, wow. Yeah.
It's okay. So one of the film's sort of structuring dyads, I suppose, is that on the one hand, you've got Grandier's kind of quote-unquote like healthy or spiritual sort of sensuality, right? You know, he is, like, as we've established, priest fucks. But, you know, he takes a wife and they are, you know, lovingly intimate with one another, but in a manner that is, in his view, consonant with his vocation. And on the other hand, you have the kind of perverse hypersexuality that the church, in its effort to repress sex, produces, basically, is kind of Russell's, you know, thesis, I guess. And yes. I would say also like Huxley's take on this, and probably why it interested Huxley so much. But, you know, the efforts to, you know, kind of exorcise the demons and so on are, you know, horrifyingly sexually violent in a really grisly way. Mm. But there kind of comes a point where, in Louis XIII in this movie is just a dream. He rocks up. In the, you know, he's been sort of summoned to witness what's playing out, you know, at this point involving multiple exorcists who cannot apparently kind of contain what they've unleashed. And so Louis shows up saying, you know, oh, I have in my possession a vial of the true blood of our Lord and Savior. Might that aid you in endeavors? And the exorcist, who again in a very Germany piece of costuming is just like bare sleeved, wearing, you know, kind of cuffs and like a cape, has great arms, my god, but
and who bears more than a passing resemblance to John Lennon at this point,
and also goes on to be a Bond villain. That's a whole other thing. So he's offered this box that allegedly contains a vial of Christ's blood, uses it, apparently sanity is restored, and then Louis's like, lol, it was empty. Like, what shit are you trying to pull on me, bitch? And then yeets, like, it's just like, ladies, it's been a pleasure, and it's borne away.
And it's just like, as you were, continue. Yeah, like, I mean, whatever you're doing.
Yeah, whatever this is, fine. At which point, all hell truly breaks loose. And in the sequence as it was originally intended by Russell, a particularly sort of sorrowful looking Christ statue is pulled down, and the nuns, who are now completely off the chain, begin to frot themselves on it frantically and really take the "this is my body" to its ultimate carnal conclusion, while Father Mignon, who's been a kind of ambivalent figure, sort of caught between, you know, he's sympathetic to Grandier, but you know, he has his responsibilities within the church, tries to get away from this by climbing up onto, I think, onto a sort of upper balcony, and in a sequence where it's like crash zooming into and out of Christ's face as these women do everything they're doing to him, crash zooming into and out of Mignon's face, cracks out a big old wank in a kind of frantic manner. All of which is intercut with Grandier on the banks of a lake performing an extremely simple Eucharistic mass. So he blesses a loaf, breaks it, raises his chalice, and obviously it juxtaposes a sincere, unadorned, simple faith with a kind of politicized, you know, debased, orgiastic kind of perversion of that faith. But yeah, weirdly enough, no one was comfortable with its inclusion.
Yeah, I wonder why they felt it might perhaps be a bridge too far. But at the same time, so, you know, I knew, but there was a bit missing, and I watched the film, and then I watched the documentary, and I kind of thought back to watching the film, and I kind of thought that you could tell it was cut, because it goes a bit funny. Now, that's not to say there aren't lots of naked people beforehand and afterwards, but it did something funny to the rhythm of the film, I thought. And when I watched the documentary, I was like, oh, so that's the precise point. I felt it was weird.
I think it's because they have to kind of separate it out into two sequences now. So you have this kind of, as near as they can get to this culmination of the sort of debauchery. And then you just have an unbroken sequence of Grandier performing this sort of roadside mass. And it stalls things a little bit. And then you kind of...
It does.
And then he arrives back and is like, you know, his life is obviously being heavily paralleled to Christ. So he sort of has his moment of like, you know, my father's house. Like, you've made a mockery of of our faith. And gets to be, you know, very, again, just like swaggering stoic Oliver Reed is... Oh.
And that little lace white collar over the black high collar. Oh my!
I could honestly talk. I was watching it someone with similar proclivities to myself, let's say. And yeah, just soutanes, man. Like,
I know. Like Warren Wright.
You know, because it's so snatched at the waist, but does good things for the chest. And then it's got the kind of the sweep and swoosh.
The drama. Yeah. Oh, like, the way that it changes the walk. Actually, it is something I think about often in the power of clerics in the past, was partly that sort of drama.
Well, I mean, something else that the film has so much fun with is like the... the things one can do with rosary beads or a crucifix or, you know, like there are just long sequences of Vanessa Redgrave's character. Never has such yearning been yearned on film. Yeah. But she'll, you know, she'll go into these kind of reveries over Grandier as Christ, and then will like jam a crucifix in, like, she'll picture herself as Mary Magdalene licking the stigmata in a very hot way. I can't pretend, like, if you think you might be into blood play and want to learn more about whether that is the case for you, this is the film to learn. But, you know, and then she'll
selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
She'll replicate that stigmata with, you know, the crucifix that she's holding, or, you know, she, all the instruments of sort of self-flagellation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a certain amount of self-pleasuring involving crucifixes and, you know, the potential that you can put these things to use.
Yeah. Well, and in another cut moment that remains cut, at the very end of the film, after Grandier's been burnt, she is given the remnants of presumably like his femur. If you've never thought before how a shattered bone might look quite phallic, you know, if you think about the sort of two bulbous protrusions at the end and then a sort of shaft, you know,
there it is.
Yeah, she finally gets to in the film, as you know, it's still heavily implied, but in the film as originally, you know, sort of envisaged, yes, she finally gets to commune with, if not his flesh, at least his bone.
Bone as opposed to boner?
Yeah.
Sorry, had to.
Boo.
I know.
I'm in no position to to give you a hard time about this.
But, and that's another major cut, right? Mm. And that was also when the Baron throws this bone down onto the floor and there's this single static shot of the bone. I was like, oh, and then it kind of, that's it. And I was like, that's weird, because the film so far has not been afraid to follow through.
Yeah.
Everything you're thinking, it takes you there. So I was like, ah, okay. So that was also a cut. Like, once they explained it, it was, yes, you can tell. You can tell.
Yeah.
It disrupts the rhythm of the film, the intention, the overall expectations you as a viewer have. Yeah, I'm glad I didn't get to see the horror version, because that must be really weird if they've cut even more.
Well, yeah, again, it's, I mean, like you say, this is something we thought about quite a few times in terms of the sort of Irish viewing experience, is that, you know, like audiences with a bit of media literacy, like, can tell when something's off in the, you know, in the cadence and the rhythm of a film. And like, it must have been bizarre to watch, to go to the cinema so regularly and feel these sort of like hiccups or these kind of moments of like, oh, well, you know, everything felt like it was sort of leading this direction, and then suddenly the film was weirdly reticent, or, you know, or just abruptly toggles focus. And I just can't imagine what a kind of, you know, sanitized version of this is.
How could you sanitize? You couldn't cut all of the tits and arse, because there would be nothing left of a large part of the film, because there was a lot of full frontal nudity. Like,
God, yes.
Totally.
And yeah, like,
that definitely wouldn't happen now. There's no way.
And also just, you know, and good like 1970s unshorn pubic hair.
Yeah.
You know, like really.
Yeah, full muffs all there.
Bushy. Well, apparently that's one of the things that goes completely in the American version. It's just any pubic hair. Just gone. Which, as you say, just I don't know what the film looks like with those sorts of trims being. There's a trimming pun here that's anyway, you know.
One of the things in the documentary that was interesting was they were talking to someone, he represented Equity on set, and he said that he didn't have the actresses coming in saying, I want naked nun money. So basically anything extra you're asked to do, you can ask for extra money. And he said they didn't ask for this or whatever. And I thought, okay, but I wanted to know, did they ask for extra money because a lot of them had their head shaved? I was like shocked by the shaven heads, actually.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, like, this is the other thing, right? Like, the documentary, I mean, you know, I'm sure everyone conducted themselves professionally by the standards of the day, but it is a bunch of people, you know, who worked in media in the 1970s talking about shooting things involving sex. And it is occasionally like, I don't know about that.
sounds occasionally. And some of the sequences that they do shoot, you know, the women aren't just running around being independently hysterical. They're being groped by other people. Like, there's a lot of really physical contact.
And that is worth, I think, probably also acknowledging about this is that I think it's complicated because the British tabloid press made this film an object of kind of interest and, you know, were trying to kind of wring as much sensationalist sort of bang for their buck out of it as possible while it was being shot. But even with that aside, like, yeah, there are, I think, some of the female performers on this did talk about, you know, kind of being groped by male extras. And, you know, I don't know how ideal a set it was for that. And I don't, you know, we don't want to be glib about that. But it's, yeah, it, like we say, I just don't know how you would shoot this now.
No.
Like, an intimacy coordinator would watch this and just die.
Yeah, it's how do you coordinate that much intimacy in these are crowd scenes of hysterical orgies.
Yeah, it's like,
I don't know how you do that.
If you remember back to when we talked about, you know, like Cecil B. DeMille sort of, it's like, imagine if you, it's like a Cecil B. DeMille level production of just naked shrieking people.
A good analogy. It is 100% that sort of energy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just.
Did you watch the trailers that were on the DVD?
Yes, the British one was insane.
Thank you. Yes. I was sitting there going, what? What?
Like, it A, managed to take, you know, one of the most confronting and stark things I've ever seen and make it boring as fuck. Like, it.
Yes, come to this film for an educational experience.
Well, they tried to make it a historical film. And, you know, so it's the thing that particularly the UK trailer emphasizes in that very, like, you know, kind of old fashioned trailer. So it's like, this is going to be 5 minutes long and a man with this sort of voice will tell you what's happening in this motion picture production, you know. But they frame it as like, this is Father Urbain Grenier. He is at the center of the town of Loudun. And they map out all the politics of it. And it's like, mate, I don't know how you find this much footage in this film that does not feature someone like inserting our Lord into themselves. I just didn't think there was 5 minutes worth of, you know, establishing shots in this movie.
It was so dull and like, so here they are being historical people in France and there will be religion. Yeah. Really? I mean, the American one was definitely like punchy, short, shocking.
Just evocative. Well, it's the way you would make a trailer for this, I think, at any point, right? Which is just, yeah, like evocative images, just emphasize the visual spectacle, emphasize the erotic energy of it all, just flash, 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 you know, Ken Russell, the devils, like, you know you want to see this. Don't pretend you're better than this. You know?
And the best bit was the line, the devils is not a film for everybody. Oh, it's for me then. It's, yeah. I'm not everybody. I am 100% going to go see this.
Which is ironic, given that obviously then British audiences get to see the least boring version of this.
Like, there had to be like almost like a content warning built into any of the advertising around it, although they were allowed to see an X-rated cut.
Yeah, it feels like one of those kind of moments where the system almost has to kind of confront its own prudery in other moments. It's like, no, lads, we know that sometimes we're a bit overcautious about this, but like really, this time we're the prudes who cried wolf, but like this is, it's a very big wolf, and it's you know, it's having an orgy in a chapel. Like we
have to warn you that this might not be for you.
Yeah.
Just so you know. Genuinely.
What I will say though is, you know, obviously we've been having fun with this. I will say this is, for my money, one of the best films about sex I've ever seen. Like this really captures absolutely everything that sex can be, for good and for ill, right? And I think the thing that makes it so unsettling and made it so difficult to edit as well, in a way that, you know, makes it, you know, kind of palatable, is that it refuses to make easy distinctions between all the different kinds of things that sex can be. So, you know, on the one hand, it's depicted as being intimate and spiritual or transcendent in a positive way, you know, something that can kind of unite people. It's also depicted as something that is utterly shattering, that, you know, that the kind of the self cannot withstand. It can be disfiguring. It is something that possesses one in a devilish manner. It makes people cruel and vindictive. It makes them sadistic, not in the kind of positive consensual way, but in the truly, you know, sort of malicious, you know, vile way. It's like, all of that is there, and, you know, it's not easy to disentangle, and it exposes the folly of trying to kind of, you know, merely repress it, or like it's just brilliant. Like it's so good.
It's the complexity of the characters, like, because Grandier starts out, you know, just shagging anybody. And
like picks up at a, like, to be clear, he picks up the woman that goes on to be his wife, and, you know, like, fortunately they fall for one another properly, or you know, there's a kind of spiritually clarifying moment for him in this. But like, he attends her mother's death through an outbreak of the plague, which is something we also haven't touched on at all, is just the plague side of this film. But yeah, he basically is like making eyes at her over her mother's like writhing body as she is being tortured by the local physicians, who are far worse than any illness.
Yeah, I mean, you know, how did you meet? Oh, well, our eyes met across
my mother's writhing naked body as she's being stung by hornets on her breast.
Yeah, soon to be dead. And
in the sweatiest scene I've ever seen.
That is such a visceral scene. That is, wow. Like, yeah. And when they look at each other, you have a moment of going, really? Now?
Yeah, it's like,
are you serious?
To be fair, not fair. They didn't hook up there and then, which kind of was what I was expecting, which probably would have made the redemption of Grandier a difficult proposition.
Yeah, definitely. No, they do actually have a conversation and everything, but there is that moment of connection in the midst of this horrific death drama from plague.
That is hyper-eroticized, and again, not in a kind of, like, spurious way. Like, it captures the febrile qualities and the proximity to the death drive that sex has.
It really tackles, like, the big existential questions that religion gets caught up in about sex as well. You know, like, Sister Jean is being, you know, trying to express her religious faith, but sex gets into her brain, and she's, like, she's losing her mind over it. And as a result, the only way for her to cope with it is to talk about possession, because it is a form of possession in a theological system that won't allow her to have a sex drive, because she's not allowed to have sex.
And that's another thing that I think the film's really good on. There's a quite telling moment with her where she's talking to an initiate, and she's kind of saying, you know, what do you think brings these women here? And, you know, she gives the kind of rote answer of, like, religious, you know, sort of belief. And she's like, no, we're inconvenient. Like, you know, we are the women for whom no diary could be found. Or, you know, in Sister Jean's case, it's she has a hunchback. So, she, you know, and the kind of disability politics of the film, again, are, I think, like, confronting, but not awful, you know, like it's the way that she's been marginalized because of her non-normate embodiment that kind of leads to this. I mean, you know, the paralleling of her emotional and spiritual warping with her quote-unquote physical warping, I suppose, is maybe a little uncomfortable and not great, but like, yeah, there's this sense of like she is taking up as much of an outlet as she is afforded by a situation. And like that becomes true for all of the women in this convent, right? You know, they don't actually give a fuck about God. And so the minute, like, you watch them, and it is very funny, you watch them sort of be like, A, they're all just being rounded up about to be executed for being possessed. And then the exorcist is like, no, you know, they are also held by the demon Grandier. And they're like, yes, cool, absolutely. Cool, what, yeah. What does possession look like? Oh, okay, you're like running around naked, like, sweet, okay, I'm in.
It's like, possession is extreme behavior, like totally extreme. Okay, yeah, well, we can do that. Yeah. We can do that en masse, in public, in the nude.
En masse, in mass, during mass.
And there is that, it's so interesting the way it's kind of, like, they are taking pleasure in it, and that pleasure is evidence of the demon, but you're like, is that really fair? Like, because of all of the religious characters in the film, the nuns, of course, have the least power, because Grandier and Richelieu are walking around. They get to move out of spaces, they get to be in public, they get to have conversations with people. And the women are in what looks like a toilet crossed with a jail.
Yeah.
Bars everywhere, and everything's so stark and white.
The way Grandier is introduced is he leads the funeral procession for his predecessor in the role of heading up the religious life of Loudun. And all of the nuns are, you know, kind of like stacked on top of each other, peering out a window, trying to see him, like just gasping for, you know, one view of him. And then, you know, Sister Jean comes and like shoos them all away. And then crawls into this like tiny little, you know, kind of basically like a pipe with, you know, bars at the end that she can sort of look up at him. Yeah. And it's so confined, and it's so, yeah, like it kind of sanitary, like unsanitarily sanitary, if you know what I mean. Like it's a very clinical space, but in a way that makes it kind of seedy. And it is like she just crawled through a urinal to like have a wank over this man.
And they shoot him coming up the hill from her perspective, like she's level with the ground, and like, of course you'd be obsessed with somebody. It's so like she has so little to see, she can really not experience the bigness of the space, which is emphasized in all the other shots, which shows this kind of amphitheater of a town. And there she is, just like a tiny little sliver, and she sees this man who,
yeah, yeah,
we'd all be into him, really. It's not a surprise. Everybody else is. Why wouldn't she? So, it's just like how it is talking about the agency around sex between the genders and within the church and between secular and otherwise.
I mean, two things, I suppose, just as much as we've sort of, I guess, skirted around it, partly out of sort of sensitivity to listeners, like with Sister Jean, it the exorcism culminates in her being very violently penetrated by a syringe. And, you know, there's an assumption that like the possession will have had physiological implications that these really shady, awful doctors are sort of there to, you know, quote unquote, deal with. Although there is a very funny sequence where they're examining her vomit, and, you know, they're kind of like, oh yes, you know, here are the innards of a man, and oh, this is clearly semen, and oh, what's that? Oh, a carrot. but yeah, so they really, one of the, again, with the film's thesis of, you know, the kind of the way that obviously repression in its intention to prevent quote-unquote perversion, it generates its own perversity. After that, another cut moment later in the film with the bone is also that you were meant to see her using the syringe on herself. So there's this sort of awful sense that she's like internalized and eroticized the abuse. And it's, you know, again, one can understand why a cut was called for there, but, you know, my God, for a film that has not wholly unduly faced some criticism for maybe how it handles that character and kind of the sexuality of women, I think actually the argument it's making through what it puts her through is a serious-minded one and a really difficult one.
What really I found so interesting about it, historian hat, is that this is a witchcraft situation. This is a witchcraft trial. But the person who ends up dead is a priest of the Catholic Church. So not just a man. I was like, this is a bit of a head fuck. As in, the traditional image of a witchcraft trial is some poor old woman who's pretty indigent and inoffensive is being targeted as part of a misogynistic kind of campaign against expressions of different types of culture. And it's like, no, it's the dude in charge. He gets torched.
I mean, I guess there's a sense in which I was saying to you before, like, in some ways, this film is like the best evocation of a lot of what literary modernism stands for that I've ever seen. And like the kind of shocking effect that modernism might have had. But that sense of, like, you know, a sort of principled and autonomous individual standing up in the face of a bad, homogenizing, modernizing, you know, centralizing culture. And his... So I think it's that sense of, like, Grandier as a kind of man no longer accommodable in, you know, these sort of compromised and compromising times, or who's just finding his way into his vocation when it is brought short. But I mean, I suppose even still, you know, you have a whole community of women being, like, horrendously exploited to bring about his downfall. So the misogyny still up and running in full force.
And it is true, as in, a lot of this actually happened. This is the craziest part about it. Like, there are stage-managed public exorcisms of nuns in order to get Grandier to the stake in the real historical events.
And the film opens with that kind of, you know, instead of, like, based on a true story, it's like, you know, the events of this film are real.
Yeah, that's as terrifying as anything in the film. It's like, you mean, like, this isn't just exaggerated. This is 100% true.
But I think that's the thing, you know, like, Russell talked about it as being his one deeply, sincerely political film. And it does, his aesthetic tendencies are toward maximalism and extremity and, you know, kind of trippy, visionary stuff. But, like, with this one, there is a sort of conviction to it that it isn't just hyperbole for hyperbole's sake. It's very convinced. But yeah, just the most astonishing thing I've possibly ever seen.
It's so extraordinary. It's such an experience. I would love to see it on the big screen. Can you imagine?
Yeah, can you imagine this on, you know, sort of like 70 millimeter, you know, like IMAX sort of level of... Because, you know, I wound up, you know, watching it unbrokenly because I was just so sort of enraptured by it. But, like... this is a film it should be impossible to escape from, right? You shouldn't be able to, like, pause it and go to the loo, or, you know, like, look at your phone.
No, you shouldn't be able to pause it, look at the person next to you and go, what the fuck? No, you should both be sitting there. Everyone should be sitting there going, oh my God.
Yeah.
And just sucked into it.
Yeah. Well, and then walk out of it, you know, like, hair blown backward. Or
stunned, sort of, like.
Well, the person I watched it with, we realized that... imagine staging a party, like, themed around this. Like, you know, get yourself, like, a deconsecrated church, get every, like, you know, set the dress code and just let the thing... And then we realized that what we were doing was just starting a cult. But, you know, if it happens, listeners, you're all invited, you know?
And is the cult around Ken Russell or Oliver Reed as Grandier? That is the question.
I think it's just around the vibe of this film. I just the first R, like, up until, you know, bad things happen to Sister John. Just that. I just want that energy. Like, truly, listeners, I know we've said this a few times. Like, if there's anything we've covered this, I nearly said term. You've been taking a module the whole time. No, if there's anything I think we've watched for this that you should go seek out, it's this.
Yeah.
Like,
but absolutely only the post 2012
yeah.
DVD, please.
Yeah,
make 100% sure that you are not getting some, you know, 1990 version.
Yeah. Accept no substitutes.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.